Okay, for this evening's talk, I didn't have a subject in mind, so I thought just as I was meditating, it's been a while at the Buddhist Society here since I've actually talked about the practice of meditation. I talk about meditation a lot during retreats, and I've got books about it. There's many people who come on a Friday night who don't go to the retreats. I thought it'd be nice to spend a little talk about the way of meditation, simply because it's so central to everything about Buddhism. It's so central to the Buddha's own enlightenment, but it's also central to the lives of the monks and the nuns who come on a Friday night to give talks. And it's certainly the center of one's lifestyle. It's a place from where all wisdom and compassion come from. And in fact, if there wasn't meditation, there wouldn't be really Buddhism. Certainly there wouldn't be the monks and the nuns, and I wouldn't be able to sit up here and give talks and do so much. It's always, I've noticed, that all the wisdom and also the kindness come from a calm mind, from a peaceful mind. I know in the world that people say to understand things, you have to think about them a lot. But I understand many people come to places like this because they've already thought too much already, and they realize it never gets them very far except a headache. And it also gets them angry and upset when they think a lot. And it gets them into terrible states of confusion. And often people come to places like this to try and find a way out of their confusion. And sometimes you hear nice pieces of advice which sound very good, but those are my pieces of advice. They're the words of the monks and the nuns here. An important thing is to make those words your own. By making them your own, I mean like seeing what those words really mean, understanding the point of all of this until it becomes part of one's own character, one's own life, and one becomes a peaceful, kind person. And of course, many people have been coming to this center for several years, and it has changed their life. But how has it changed their life? It made them more calm, more peaceful, and that is what meditation is all about. Because we live in a very active world, a very busy world, and it always seems to get more busy rather than less busy for most. Certainly it does for me, being an abbot, being a monk, coming and going. Perhaps it's too kind to accept too many invitations. But nevertheless, it's very hard not to. But certainly it's the ability just to let go, to rest, to make my mind peaceful, which keeps me going. And it's something which we can teach other people. Of all the different religions in the world, it's Buddhism, which is centers on the not what you believe, not on dogma, not even on arguing, but it centers on like finding out for oneself through the power of meditation. And it is very, very powerful when one learns how to make the mind peaceful and calm. Out in the statue outside, we have the Buddhism in brief, Buddhism in a nutshell, which says to, what is it? To do what is good, stop doing what is bad, and to purify the mind, the teaching of all the Buddhas. And when we talk about meditation, we're saying about purifying the mind, stilling it, making it calm and peaceful. Too often people think that the only way that you can make the mind peaceful is to go to sleep. But of course, you've seen the monks meditating here, and I don't think any time you've seen a monk snore when they're meditating. And sometimes you see them sitting absolutely straight. And that's a sign that their minds are very, very clear. And certainly my mind becomes very clear in meditation, and I use it to help me. So often when you get into difficulties, such as you're sick or you're tired and you need to perform, because sometimes look how many people have come here this evening, wanted to hear a nice talk. And how can you actually give a talk like that if you've been so busy all day? For example, I recall this one time, several years ago, when I was in Canberra, just being taken around by people. I was supposed to give a series of talks, but they thought they'd show me around, and they took me out one morning. And that morning I had a terrible cold. You know what Canberra is like, it's a very chilly place, and I had a terrible cold. My eyes were watering, my nose was always dripping. And I felt terrible, just the first day of a cold. But they insisted on taking me to this monastery a couple of hours out of Canberra. The monks in the monastery weren't very kind. They kept me there just most of the day. I kept on asking, I want to go back, have a rest before my talk, but they wouldn't let me go. By the time I left and got back to Canberra, it was 10 minutes before my talk. Never had time for a shower or a cup of tea. And he just had to go there and give a talk. And many people were coming. It would have been advertised. And I was in big trouble. So what did I do? I tried to give a talk. But every few moments you had to stop and sneeze. And when you weren't sneezing, you were coughing. And you were wiping the water dripping down from your eyes. I felt terrible. And the talk was just as bad. It was terrible too. And after 15 or 20 minutes of this, I realized I was getting nowhere. It was suffering for me and suffering for all my audience. And Buddhism doesn't believe in suffering. We're compassionate. So I said, okay, let's stop. And we're supposed to do the meditation afterwards, but let's do the meditation now. We did half an hour meditation. It was a wonderful experience. Because in that half an hour, just sitting absolutely still, I realized there were some occasions, sometimes I'm lazy, like most people, and sometimes we don't really have to, you don't. But when you really have to, you really do it properly. And that was one of the times I really meditated properly. Just let go of the past, let go of the future. Important thing, let go of controlling. Just allow all those liquids in the body to ooze out if they wanted to. Don't try and stop them. Don't try and force the mind. Just relax, allow it to be, center the mind in the present moment. And after a very short time, my mind became peaceful. My mind became peaceful. I forgot all about the cold and just was enjoying this, just the quietness within. When you meditate, you can turn to the quietness, the peace within. When things start to slow down and stop, the mind isn't thinking so much. You become stable, still, and I was just enjoying the peace. And after the meditation finished, only half an hour, so had my cough, so had my dripping nose, my eyes were clear, and I had energy, and I gave this really brilliant talk. And the people who were watching afterwards said, that's amazing, because they saw me just before I meditated, and they saw me afterwards. It was like one of those advertisings. You know, you see before, you know, you use this toothpaste, and afterwards, when you use the right toothpaste, and it was just like that. I actually saw just what meditation can do, just in half an hour. And not only just for curing colds and making you sort of bright, but if you've got sickness or whatever, you can really just calm the mind down, make it very peaceful. And it's amazing what you can do with this body. And you get clarity, you get compassion. It's amazing what you can perform. So how do you actually do this? The main thing with Buddhist meditation is actually stop all this controlling business. Because as people in this world, we're just such great controllers. We're always managing our body, managing our life, managing other people's lives, always controlling this and controlling that. And when we sit down to meditate, what do? We control it again. It's just a terrible thing which we do. We say, okay, just now let go, be in the present moment. We say, you better be in the present moment or else. And you grab hold of that present moment and you throttle it. And you just don't give yourself an inch. You're just like a US Marine, like a sumo wrestler. You wrestle with that mind of yours and you sort of kill it. No wonder it rebels, because you're not treating it properly. I always like to encourage people to remember just a symbol of a Buddha, like a compassionate, kind being. And if that's, you know, what a Buddha is, you know, even, you know, non-Buddhists, they've got a feeling for what a Buddha is, a compassionate, kind, gentle being who never went to war, never criticized anybody, never sort of was harmful or violent to anybody. No, it was compassionate, gentle. Now that's the sort of mind which we have to generate to meditate, the compassionate, kind, gentle mind. So you just look at yourself in this moment, instead of controlling, say, this is good enough. This moment will do. I will allow it to be. I will embrace this moment as it is. The door of my heart is open to this moment, no matter what it is. I will allow you to be. Look at the law of karma. All this karma has made this moment happen now. You can't stop it. It's here. It's arrived. So you make the most of it. You allow it to be, you embrace it, you have gratitude for it being here. You don't have this fault-finding mind, which is the opposite of Buddhism. You know that many people, it's so easy to find fault. You look at your partner, ooh, full of faults. Look at the government, oh, just so many faults. Look at life. Terrible life. And I could look at all the monks in my monastery. Ooh, who would have them if you were an abbot? But you can look at it that way, but you can look at it the other way. Just so grateful to be around such good monks. So grateful to be around your partner. So grateful to have this moment, this mind, in this moment. Now you see, this is what we mean by letting go, accepting, letting be, embracing. This is good enough. Love, compassion, peace. All the same thing, but just talked about with different words. Just like I remember when I was a student at school, because my parents were very poor, I got a Saturday job in the shoe shop. And it was this big company who sold these shoes. And because I was actually, after a while, got to know what was going on, I couldn't believe it. This big shoe company in Britain, they were selling the same shoes in different shops. But the different shops, because the shops had a different sort of clientele, they just put the price up. In the more expensive shops, which had maybe better decor, it's exactly the same shoes. And in the shop where I was saying was the low-class shoe shop, exactly the same shoes, but a lower price. The same thing, but just marketed differently. And that's all that really was. It's just saying what you experience in your mind. It's just how it's sold, how it's marketed. That's the most important thing. So whatever you're experiencing, it's not the experience itself, it's how you regard it, how you look at it. And that's a trick in meditation. You learn how to take any experience. I had an experience of a cold, feeling really rotten, but I made peace with it. And soon my mind got into very deep meditation, which shows you how easy it is to meditate when you know how. Letting it be, letting go. Allowing it just to exist. Not fighting, not controlling, making peace. That was every now and again. I just have these themes of meditation. A few months ago, that was my basic theme with meditation. Make peace with the moment. Make peace, not war. I was born in the 1950s, growing up in the 60s. Remembers of they used to have this CND, ban the bomb, going in marches. That was part of growing up in London in the 60s and 70s. We always used to start saying, make peace, not war, make peace, not war. That was just like a slogan of the left wing, but I didn't realize it came from the Buddha. Make peace, not war, with your mind. And what happens then is when you start making peace with your mind, the mind makes peace with you. And you have this incredible process starts to happen, which you can watch, and it's called the process of meditation. When you stop fighting the mind, when you let go, when you embrace this moment, when you stop trying to control it, when you don't find fault with it, when you make peace with it, things start to slow down. The mind doesn't move so much. There's not so much business. The mind starts to feel this wonderful sense of inner peace. You're making peace. And of course, what you make is what you end up with. So when you make peace with every moment, after a while, you have peace. You know the biggest problem which people have when they start to talk about meditation? Oh, I can't stop the mind thinking. Of course you can't stop the mind thinking. Look at what you just said. I can't stop the mind thinking. You should stop trying to stop the mind thinking. And then you'll stop thinking. This is a problem because we always get involved. If we're meditating, we want to do the meditation. You're missing the point. Meditation is not something you do. It's not some sort of craft or hobby or some other business you do. You work so hard out there in the world, working to make a living, looking after your family, even just getting here, doing your social and family responsibilities. So much hard work. Why do you just use the same method when you come and meditate? This is relaxing time, letting go time, compassion time, time of peace. So when you actually learn about meditation, it's just sitting there and doing nothing. That's why very often I used to tell people, look, if you're a lazy person, if you really are lazy, then meditation is made for you. In other words, now this is really knowing how to be lazy, really lazy, but people don't know anything about laziness. By laziness, they think they're just doing something else when they're supposed to be doing what they're supposed to be doing. That's what laziness is usually mean. But what laziness really is just allowing this moment to be, embracing it, not doing anything. This is through inside this controller, this thing which causes all the problems in your life and other people's lives as well. You make peace with that, and after a while it just disappears. It calms down. It's settled. They have actually the word in Buddhism, they call it samatha. It literally means settling. It's settling the business of life. Finishing all your business. Have you done yet with your business? Or have you still got loose ends, unfinished business? Look at your life. Whenever will your business be finished? Even if you have a heart attack now, you still have so much unfinished business. Even if you say that, okay, 7 days you're going to die, can you finish all your business in 7 days? Of course you won't be able to. 7 years, 70 years you'll be dead, you still won't have all your business finished. That's what life is like for most people. If you ask what the meaning of life is, it's like unfinished business for most people. You can quote that. Life is unfinished business. So how on earth can you find any peace in this life? You find peace by finishing that business. You know that lovely story in my book? Many of you know this, but it's a great little adage about the monk in South Thailand who was building his hall. When it came to the Wassa, the rains retreat, he sent the builders home. It was meditation time, wanted a rest. He wanted some peace in his monastery. Don't want builders around when it's meditation time. And a few days later, this man came to visit and saw this half-completed hall and asked the abbot, oh, when's your hall going to be finished? And this great monk said, my hall is finished. What do you mean it's finished? There's no windows in the openings. There's no roof on. There's pieces of wood, cement bags, bricks all over the place. Are you going to leave it like that? What do you mean it's finished? And what he said was so important. He said, what's done is finished. Now that is very powerful. Can you remember that in your life? Every now and again, what's done is finished. So that way there is an end of things. There's a way of finishing. There's a way of getting some peace in life. There is a way of letting go. You actually make life complete. What that really means is you let go of the past, you let go of the future, you complete things. Understanding it will never be perfect if you're a controller. But if you let go of controlling, then it suddenly does become perfect. So what happens in this meditation? You get in this incredible little process. When you stop doing things, you find your mind starts to calm down. You start to become at peace with things. The thoughts start to slow down because you're not making them. The more business you do, the more thoughts you construct. And if you do lots and lots of business, those thoughts get faster and faster and faster. Many years ago, as a young monk, I watched a person go crazy. Over a period of 3 or 4 days, I couldn't stop it. I was a young monk, didn't really know what I was doing, but I noticed as this man was talking to me, his words were getting more and more fast. The power or the current of his thinking was getting more and more out of control. And you can actually see exactly what is happening. The thinking mind just got stronger and stronger until basically it burst. It burst through reality and he became crazy. Thinking too much, out of control. Have you ever sometimes worried so much you can't go to sleep at night? It's all too much thinking. You haven't had the ability just to calm the mind and make it still. Have you ever got so worried because you've had bad news, maybe a cancer or maybe a death in the family or just gone bankrupt or whatever, and you can't calm the mind, you just worry so much? You know how much pain that is? There's more pain from a thinking mind than from a sick body. It's the mind which is the most cause of suffering inside people. But it could also be the greatest cause of peace and happiness. If we can just allow the mind to stop all this thinking business. And to be able to stop the thinking bits, all we need to do is to let it go, leave it alone. And the mind will just calm down all by itself in good time. The story I was telling just about 6 months ago, I'm not sure when the last time I told this here, but it was a fascinating story because it showed how stupid I was, and I learned actually how to make my mind peaceful. It was my Six Rains retreat story when I was by myself in a perfect monastery. You couldn't get a better monastery than that. It was in the north of Thailand. It was cool. It was even in a tea plantation. And being an English monk who liked his tea, it was all around me. I had a great time. But after a couple of weeks, after a month, my meditation started to fall apart. I couldn't stop my mind from thinking. And when it started thinking, it didn't just think about Buddhism or about Dhamma. It started to think about very unmonkish things. And when it started thinking about such things, I really said, no, that's inappropriate for a monk to think about such things. Stop it. But the more I tried to stop it, the worse it got. And after another week or two, I was going crazy. It wasn't just like romance, it was weird stuff as well. And I thought, oh, come on, get out of this. And I couldn't stop it. So it got so bad, I thought I was going crazy. And it was worse, I didn't have any other monk to talk to. You know, no other sort of person to get some advice. So I went out to this Buddha statue. Every monastery has these Buddha statues. I just use it as a means of reflection. I went up to that Buddha statue, bowed 3 times, and actually said, help. You know, can you give me some inspiration to stop my mind going crazy? And the inspiration which came up, I thought, I'll do a deal. And the deal was this. For most of the day, please let me just do my meditation to watch the breath. But mind, if you want to think about, you know, girls, romance, whatever, we'll do it between 3 p.m. and 4 p.m. every day. I'll give you 1 hour. That's my deal. So I did that. I said, okay, for 1 hour a day, you can think whatever you want. Anything goes. But the rest of the day, you behave yourself and be a monk. It's like one of my disciples here some time ago. He said, I'd like to become a monk. He asked, can he ordain as a monk? But on one condition. So what's that condition? I can have every Saturday evening off. I said, no. You can't do that. It's not a part-time job, being a monk. So anyway, I decided to try and do it part-time. 23 hours a day, I behave myself. 1 hour a day, 3 to 4, anything goes. But it didn't work as I expected. Because it was just as hard. You sit down there and you try and watch the breath or be in the present moment. Straight away, the mind will start thinking about the weirdest things. Come back. And it go off again. Come back. Go off again. And there was a struggle. But it got to 3 p.m. So I went up to my room. I leaned against the back. Leaned against the wall, put my feet out and said, okay, whatever you want to think about, go for it. Anything goes, the most unmonkish, weird, strange, romantic, sexual, whatever it is, you can now think that. And that was the quietest hour of the whole day. My mind just went so peaceful, I just watched the breath. All by itself. And that was weird and strange, but it really taught me a lesson. I realized why my mind was going crazy. Because I was trying to control it. That's all it was. The more I tried to force it and control it, the more it rebelled. When I let go, I said, you can do whatever you want. Then it became peaceful. And I've told that story to many people. I once told it to this young girl who was visiting our monastery from Singapore. And to give her an example, that I told a story of this little girl in Perth. I think she was only about 6 or 7 years of age, and she decided to leave home. She was fed up with her mummy for telling her to tidy up her room or wash her hands before she ate and to do this and do that. She said, right, I can't stand it, I'm leaving home. A 6 or 7 year old. Now this was a very smart mother. She said, okay. And she helped her child pack her bags. And she went down to the kitchen, made her some sandwiches, and saw her off at the door. Bye-bye, have a nice life. Now, that was a very smart woman. I really admire her, because what does a 6 or 7 year old do? They got a little suitcase, so they got their sandwiches, they go down to the end of the street, and then by the time they get just around the corner, they're homesick. So they come straight back again, and the mother is still standing at the door, because she knew exactly what would happen, so she came back again. Because that's what happens. And I told this to a Singaporean girl, and her mother did the same when she was 7 years of age. She got so fed up with her mother for disciplining her. She said, right, I'm going to leave. But in Singapore, they never gave her some sandwiches. They just gave her $20. You can buy your own lunch. So off went this little girl with $20 and her suitcases. And of course, she never got to the bottom of the apartment block. Went down the lift and came straight back up again. And that's what happens. And that's what I do with my mind. For that 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, my mind wanted to do a bell, so I helped it, packed its bags, gave it $20, metaphorically speaking, off you go. And of course, it came right back to me. Now, that's an important part of meditation. The psychology of meditation is allowing things to be, being kind. If you're kind to your mind will be kind to you. If you make war with it, you'll just get collateral damage. If you make peace, you'll find peace. Allowing things to be, letting it go, allowing this moment to exist. Kindness, compassion, peace, freedom. That story about freedom years ago, I'll just say it in brief. You know, just the real difference between a prison and my monastery is not the comfort, because my monastery is far more uncomfortable than any prison. But people in my monastery want to be there. That's why they don't feel it's a prison. In jail, you don't want to be there. That's why it's a prison. And from that, I got this wonderful understanding of the difference between freedom and prison. A prison is any place you don't want to be. Freedom is any place where you're content to be. So if you've got a crazy mind and you don't want to be there, it becomes jail. It becomes huge suffering, and it makes it worse. If you've got a crazy mind and you're happy to have that crazy mind, you're content. You find freedom happens and the mind starts to become calm and still. You're giving it freedom. Try that out in your life. When have you felt free and when have you felt in prison? Every time you don't want to be here, you put yourself in a jail. Now, if you don't want to understand about the Buddhist way of meditation, it's all about being content, giving yourself freedom, content to be here in this moment, no matter what's happening. That's how I dealt with the problem of the cold. I was just content to have a cold. I stopped fighting it. When I was trying to give a talk, I was fighting it so hard, trying to stop it, it made it worse. When I started meditating, okay, have a cold, that's fine with me. I freed the cold. I allowed it to be. And then it disappeared. My mind became still and peaceful. What's actually happening? The mind is like a lake with waves on it. It's an archetypal symbol for the mind, a body of water. It's been used for centuries, not just in Buddhism but in other traditions. Imagine a body of water. When there's waves on the surface, that's like your thoughts. Some people's minds have got tsunamis every day. They destroy so much of your happiness and your friendships and your contentment. There's huge waves goes in there. So the whole idea of meditation is calming those waves down. So there's not a storm at sea, no tsunamis, until there's hardly a ripple on your mind. How do you calm the waves of your mind down? Too many people think the only way to calm down the waves of your mind is to put your hands on the crest and pat them down. Try and smooth the surface. And that's what many people do to meditate. They try and smooth their mind. They actually make more waves that way. So with a body of water, all you need to do is to take your hands out, stop disturbing it, and it becomes still all by itself. It's all about patience. Just be patient in this moment. And after a while, the moment is so still and so peaceful. The first time I meditated, it was only for 5 minutes. I didn't know what I was doing, and that was good. When you know too much of what you're doing, you do too much. Because I didn't know what I was doing. What am I supposed to do? So I didn't do anything. But then my mind became reasonably quiet, and that hooked me straight away. The first 5 minutes hooked me in meditation, because that was peaceful. It was the first time I felt any type of peace in my life at all. But it wasn't just peaceful, just dulling out. It was peaceful, and my mind started to become clear. Like, peace goes along with clarity. This is one of the reasons why people, please excuse me, are so stupid in life. They think too much. When they think too much, they see too little. The less you think, the more you see. The clearer everything becomes. Which is why, after a very good meditation, it's quite easy to solve problems. So, for example, in the last meditation retreat, somebody started, they just came from work, they had lots of problems at work. And so they said, what am I supposed to do? Because there's so much unfinished business and really big problems in my company. I said, oh, don't worry, just meditate after a while and just leave it all alone, see what happens. And she did. She just meditated 2 or 3 days, 4 days, and then in her meditation, she got all the answers to the problems in her company. It's a really good one, things you could never think about usually. In the calm, in the peace, you get solutions because you can see clearly. So if you want to solve any problems in life, or in business, or in family, or in your monastery, or whatever else you're doing, stop thinking about it. Make the mind still and peaceful, and you get clarity. The mind becomes powerful. So as you let go, as those waves get less and less, when that mind becomes still, you can start to feel power building up. This is the inner power of the mind, to purify the mind from all these distracting thoughts, to allow it to become still. And it's like that old simile of the sun in a magnifying glass being focused. It's a stillness. Sometimes people call meditation concentration. Yeah, in a sense, but it's not you concentrating the mind. It's just the result of stillness. That's why I prefer stillness and concentration. So the mind becomes so still. It stops moving in the past and the future. It stops thinking. And what's left is awareness, motionless, still. And this is actually where wonderful things happen in your meditation. This is the two avenues for energy in the mind. Your energy, the energy of your life, can go in one of two ways. It can go into controlling and doing things, or it can go into just knowing, being aware. The two parts of the mind, the active and the passive. So much of our energy is used up in just doing things, controlling things, thinking about things, worrying about things. This is all the active part of the mind, which means we have got hardly any energy left just for being aware and just knowing. And because of that, we get very, very dull, even depressed. Why do we get depressed? Because we do too much. We've got no energy left just to see, to know, to feel, to understand. I came across that idea because when I used to go visit my family in England, I always used to go in November, December, January, February, this time of the year. And that's a very stupid time to go to Northern Europe because it's just so depressing. It's just so grey all over. I'm not going to do the old grey joke today. But it's so grey all over the place. You can read about that in my book. It's just so grey and depressing. And when I went over there, that my brother was driving me around. And having come from Perth, which is bright and sunny and people wear colourful clothes, I noticed myself, the sky is grey, the buildings are all grey. No one paints their buildings bright colours in England. And people wear all these grey clothes. They've got overcoats on. And just, you can't see any colour at all. And because it's the northern hemisphere, it's quite far above the equator, very close to the North Pole. At least it felt like that. And the sun, when it comes up maybe about 9 o'clock and it goes down in the morning, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock, it starts to get dark again. There's hardly any light there. And because of that, people used to get depressed. Simply because there was nothing to actually to stimulate their senses. And a few clever psychiatrists had got the very simple remedy of putting these people who were depressed at this particular time in England, putting them in a bright room with wearing Hawaiian shirts, you know, with walls of different colours, and just to stimulate them, to brighten them up. And it worked. They had a lot more energy, because the energy was actually going into the knowing more rather than into the doing, because it was just so dull. Now, if ever any of you felt that life is so grey and dull, you feel so depressed, you know, there's nothing which stimulates you anymore, just even the food just all tastes the same, and just people that just all look the same, and there's just nothing, even flowers, just flowers all look the same, smelly old flowers. Sunsets, seen those before. Here goes another sunset. Birds fly over the trees, shitting on the ground. They're depressing. Now the point was that if you can get in that mood, the most beautiful things in the world can look so depressing. Why? It's nothing to do with those things. It's to do with you. Because there's not enough energy in your life. Now, if you were actually, say, in London this time of the year, and you were in love, oh, it's so beautiful. Oh, just those amazing buildings and those wonderful people and just the beautiful sunsets and those pigeons. Oh, they're just so lovely. Because when you're actually in love, everything looks beautiful. So what's actually happening there? Because the knowing, you're just enjoying life so much, the energy is pouring into knowing. You don't have to do very much because life is okay. You've got no problems when you're in love. The point being here is I'm making the difference between the doer and the knower. And when the energy goes into doing things, when you haven't got any much energy left in the knowing, life becomes dull. You're just like going around with a flashlight for a mind which has got low batteries. Everything looks just dull and miserable, and you get upset and you get angry. What happens when you start meditating? Because you're not allowing energy to go into doing things, you're not being like active and controlling, you're not thinking and managing, you're accepting, allowing things to be, making peace, you're not making war and doing things. The energy of your being starts to go into just bare awareness, what we call in Buddhism mindfulness, knowing. You become more alert, more awake, more alive. You find you get less depressed. One of the things which I recommend, if anyone has depression, you practice this meditation, your depression is going to disappear. You're going to become a happier, more bright, more positive person. It's not that you are deciding to change yourself. It just happens naturally, whether you like it or not. You see more, you feel more, you hear more, you know deeper. The colours of life start to become brighter. You become energised. You become happy. That's why this way of meditation, which the Buddha started to teach, became very, very popular. Because without having to go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, without having to have any theories, without having to have any beliefs or read this or do this, it was happening naturally. A very fundamental way of overcoming negativity, depression, and even grumpiness, so you became a happier person, an easier person to live with. My goodness, so many times people have actually come to my meditation classes. A classic story years ago, this lady came to my course. This was when we had the South of the River class over in Gosnells. Now we had it in Armdale for a long time now. And she came there and said, oh, I didn't feel like coming today. I just came home from work, I was so busy, and I was so tired. But my kids said, Mummy, please go to meditation. No, I don't feel like it. Mummy, go to meditation. No, why? Mummy, you are much nicer mummy when you come back from meditation. Because the kids realized that what meditation did to their mother was actually to make her less grumpy, more kind, more peaceful, a better person to live with. And so this, you can understand why this is happening here. When you calm the mind down, when you give it energy into knowing, you lessen your negative qualities of the mind. You become more positive. It's nature that this happens. energy going more into knowing, less into controlling. And you find the very reason you want to control your life to give you better happiness, you realize you've just been doing exactly what you shouldn't have been doing. You want to control, you want to manage, you want to think to solve your problems, but you make more problems. You stop the thinking, you calm the mind down, you let go much more, and then there's no problems to be solved anyway. You don't need to manage life. Life starts to flow more smoothly. You become more successful. You become an easier person to live with. You have better relationships. All those things which were problems before are now no longer problems. Which is why meditation is just incredibly popular, and it works so well. If you do it properly, you become a happier, more peaceful person, less grumpy, and also less sick. You understand all those negative emotions which run through people. That's what makes them sick. That's what gives them living a long life. It's amazing. In my monastery, that all the people who keep coming to my monastery, it's been such a long time now since anybody has died. It's because of my monastery. I told this in my monastery, and it's quite remarkable. Because if any of the disciples die, I have to go to their funerals. I know when people die and when they don't die. I think it's a long while. When's the last funeral we went to? It's a long time now. You see, it actually works. So you meditate, you come to this joint, and you live a long life. Which is why there's some of the monks, we got monastery in California, and they told me many years ago, I checked this out, I asked them, is this actually true? He said, yes, it is true, that if someone is a meditator, and one of those monks signs the form, yes, we say they are a good meditator, or they meditate, they come to our retreats, you do get a reduction in your health premium. When you have your sort of your health insurance, you write down your meditator, you get a reduction. See, so it's even economically worthwhile as well. And the reason is because everybody knows that if you let go of that negativity, you become a healthier person. But of course, the meditation goes much deeper than that, because as you go more on that path, that energy goes more and more into the knowing until you become incredibly bright and happy, and you become centered. Have you ever noticed when you're happy, you don't want to move? All movement is about discontent. You move the body because it's unpleasant. You move your house because you don't like to be there. You want to be somewhere else. When you're really happy, you become very still. The more still you are, the more happy you become. What happens is the mind starts to really become still and goes inside itself. This is the path of meditation. And the more focused it becomes, the more powerful it becomes. When it starts to become powerful, it can start to do things which most normal people can't do. And this is actually where we start to get the insights of Buddhism. Not only can you think much more clearly and much more deeply than ordinary people, you can actually see the solutions of things. Your memory also increases enormously. One lady who was on a retreat recently, who told me that when she was studying in Melbourne at a university, it was Monash, she would never go to tutorials, she told me. Didn't need to, she got the top marks every year. I asked her how. Because I knew what she was going to say. She was a Sri Lankan. When she was very young, there was this meditation teacher close by to where she lived. And he was a great teacher. And she learned meditation from him. So whenever she went to any classes, she knew how to make her mind so still, she could listen and remember everything. And when it came time for the examinations, or even writing an assignment, the first thing which came out of her mind, she wrote down, and it was always correct. She said she had a great time at university. Hardly any work, but always the top marks. Now that's called efficiency. Simply because she learned how to train her mind. I heard the same from some of our monks in England about a doctor at Exeter University. When he was doing his med school, he too would hardly ever go to any tutorials. He wouldn't even go to the lectures. for he too always came top every year. They want to find out why, and it's meditation. He trained his mind to be still. When you're still, you're like a sponge which has got no water in it. Well, it can soak up things very easily. But how can you actually learn when your sponge is just so full of other stuff? To actually empty the mind out, to make it so still and peaceful, then it can actually absorb anything. It's a great efficiency to be able to read and understand, to retain information. But more than that, just before I came in here, people were talking about what happens to the tsunami victims after they die. And I said, most of them get reborn sooner or later. And that's part of Buddhism. But they say, why? All this Buddhist business about rebirth, can you really accept that? And again, it's through the power of meditation you can actually know that's true. And this is where the power of meditation really starts to bite, when you actually start to see some truths for yourself. And how do you see that? There's two ways where meditation can prove for yourself that rebirth actually happens. The most obvious way is actually when you start recalling your own previous lives. And that's not so hard to do if you learn how to make your mind very still and start to give it that power when all the energy goes into knowing. Your memory is enhanced. Really enhanced. And all you need to do is to ask yourself, what is my earliest memory? And memories from the past start to come up in front of you. Memories of when you were a child, when you were a baby. Memories when you're in your mother's womb, and sometimes memories of a past. And this is your memories. And the strange thing about that type of experience, the memory which is empowered by very still and peaceful meditation, is that it always comes with a strange sense of absolute certainty. Memories of many different types, but this type is one every time it happens to someone, it's always, no doubt at all, that was you in a past. So this is fascinating. You can actually do this. The other way of proving for yourself that rebirth is a fact is actually knowing just the nature of the mind. Because when you go deep in meditation, that's what you're going to. When the mind becomes still, it becomes powerful, and your body fades away. All these five senses of seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, all disappear. You're just left with the mind. Just the mind and nothing else. You can't hear, you can't smell, you can't taste, you can't touch. You can't feel anything. You're nicely inside. Very powerful. Not asleep, but incredibly awake. In those sorts of states, you go to what we call a pure mind state. That's all that's left there, just pure mind. Very blissful, very still, very powerful. Now you know that actually when you actually go through those states, just before, as I've written in my little books there, before you actually go into the state of deep meditation, you go through what we call these nimittas, these lights which appear in the mind. When all the five senses disappear, you're getting so still you can't see, you can't hear, you can't smell, taste or touch. You just can't do that, they're all gone. A beautiful light appears in the mind. You go into that light and on the other side is the jhanas. Have you ever read about people having out-of-the-body experiences or near-death experiences, floating up out of their body? What happens next to them? They go towards the light. I know now that that light which you experience at death is exactly the same as you experience in this meditation. But what is death anyway but the five senses and the body disappearing? What is meditation, the five senses and the body disappearing? What you're left with is the mind. Exactly the same experience. So actually when you're meditating, you're actually practicing how to die. How to let go of the body and its five senses. And you know that when that body and the five senses disappears, it's not that everything just stops. You know that this mind continues on. The stream of consciousness. Why? Because you've done that before. And it's fascinating that if you can remember even past lives and what happens, then getting a new birth. It's all these ideas and theories that you hear about in Buddhism. It starts to make so much sense because it becomes part of your experience. You can remember what happens when you die. Someone just asked me just before I came in here. They were a bit concerned because they had a few deaths in the family and also the tsunami victims. What happens to them? Is it just they're just gone, just disappear? It seems so sad. Their little kids haven't had a chance to live and they've just been swept away. It seems so cruel. But it's not so cruel. It's still, you know, unfortunate, it's still sad. But it's not so bad if they are given another chance. This particular lady was just asking about her, one of her relations just had a child and the child was stillborn. And it reminded me of one of the disciples here. They too had a child who was stillborn and had an ultrasound just a couple of days before the birth. But in those few days, the baby, the fetus, had turned in the womb and strangled itself on the cord and came out stillborn. And I know all about that because I did the funeral service for this family. It was a very moving experience because they dressed the baby up, they gave it a name, and actually at the funeral service they actually tipped the coffin vertical, and I was next to it, the family was either side, and had a family photograph. So they called it Charlie. Managed actually to get in a family photograph just as a stillborn child. I thought that was really quite nice. But one of the things this family did, which is quite common in many cultures, in fact, that Professor Ian Stevenson wrote a whole book about this, that with a ballpoint pen they marked the foot, the heel, of their deceased child. Because they thought, as part of the tradition, that maybe that child didn't quite have enough good karma to actually to make it into this life. But maybe it'll try again. And sure enough, after a few months, the woman became pregnant again. And when she gave birth to a child, one of the first things they did was to look. And it was there. The birthmark. Exactly the same as the mark they'd made with a ballpoint pen on the heel of their baby's foot. So they were quite sure that that was a baby reborn again. Of course, it makes them feel much better. And it's true because I know this. This is what happens when people try and take birth as a human being. Sometimes they don't quite have enough good karma. Almost enough, but not quite. I gave the metaphor. It's just like you go to the airport. You haven't got enough money to buy a proper ticket, so you get a standby. And it's just like this baby just had a standby ticket. Unfortunately, she didn't quite have enough, because that's what happens if you're on standby. Sometimes enough people get on the plane, you can't get on. But they'll always actually put you on a plane going later. So that's what happened to this baby. Didn't have enough good karma to actually to make that birth, but the next one, you managed to get a seat. Get reborn. That's what usually happens. So beings, when they're sort of trying to get reborn, they'll actually come and they keep on trying until they get in there. Just the same as you will keep trying to get on the plane until you get a seat. So this is actually what happens. And yet you can understand this because people can have those memories and they can remember trying and not making it and trying again. This is part of their clear memories which come as a result of empowering the mind in meditation. So you get some of these understandings, these so-called theories, these parts of Buddhism which you don't have to believe. But you can know, you can find out for yourself. So that's one of the other wonderful things about meditation. All the wisdom, the knowledge, all these words, they don't just come from reading books. They come from your own experience. When you have that experience, it's very clear about the big picture of life and many, many lives. And also you can actually get all the other answers about whether there's a God or not. What is a God? What is a self? Who are you? Why are you? But it's a waste of time me talking about that. Because when you start talking about such things, people argue with you. And it's not, we don't sort of teach in order to for people to argue. The most important thing is people to be able to find out for themselves. Don't you want to know who you are, what life is, what's doing all of this? And this is how you find out. So traditionally, it's always been the case in Buddhism. We've meditated. We purified our minds for the sake of letting go of the negativity in our life, for having that inner happiness, that peace, so we don't go crazy with too much thinking, we don't go crazy with anger and ill will towards other people, which has terrible consequences. People go and kill each other and blow each other up and rape each other and beat each other, all because they don't train their minds. Their minds are out of control. They're monsters. You take a monster and teach them meditation, oh, they became so wonderful, so peace and so nice. You can actually calm yourself down. You can actually purify. You can change. And you can become more successful, more alert, more wise. But also, you can really understand what's going on in life, especially things like rebirth and karma, and eventually understand the nature of existence, who you are. That's why it's meditation which makes you enlightened. So sometimes people start meditating just to solve their inner problems, to get healthy even. Great, it works, why not? But it goes much deeper than that. You carry on this meditation business and you'll become just so peaceful, so happy, so powerful. And that mindfulness, that power mindfulness, would eventually answer all your questions. Much more than I could ever do. Much more than the books ever do. The books give you some hints, but you make that mind peaceful and calm and you can find out for yourself. You will find, oh yeah, I don't know what rebirth is. You know what heaven and hell are. I talked about that last week. You know what happens to people when they die in tsunamis. So when you can actually become more at peace with what happens in life. And you can become more effective, more compassionate, instead of just making too much problems and making a mess of this world. You can live more simply, because you've got inner happiness. You don't need all these crutches for happiness, like big crystal sets, TVs and alcohol and movies and all this sort of stuff. You don't need all of that to be happy, because you've got your own inner happiness. And you're at peace with yourself and the world. And you start seeing deeply into why. That's why the meditation has always been the great path, the way that your questions are answered. So the more you make the mind still, the more you learn how to let go, stop controlling, relax, make the mind peaceful, make it still, develop more kindness, more compassion, the door of my heart's open to this moment, no matter whatever it is. The more you let go and at peace, the more powerful you become, the wiser you become, the freer you become, the more liberated you can become. So that's what Buddhism is all about, purifying the mind. Okay, so that's the talk today about meditation and purifying the mind. So are there any questions, comments or complaints about tonight's talk? Any questions? Any comments? Yes. Okay, you're a teacher. How can you make your students more calm and peaceful before a lecture? I'm not quite sure what level you're teaching at, but one of Fenn's disciples, you might call her, was teaching in a school in the south of the river, and I think it was year sixes. And because she was a regular of our meditation group down in Armadale, she started teaching her class quiet time. She didn't call it meditation because meditation meant Buddhism, and some people were a bit afraid of anything other than their own religions. So she called it quiet time. That was one of the first reasons for her success. And as I package it, it'd be the same message, but package it in a sort of a non-confrontational way. And she started the kids off with about 5 minutes, no, even less than that, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, the beginning of the school year. Built it up until about, by the end of the school year, they were doing about 15 minutes every morning. And the headmaster of the school, who I met a couple of times, was so supportive because he saw the results. You say, these kids, their ability to learn, to concentrate, to focus is so increased. But there's also some unintended side effects. And they told me what they were, that sometimes there was some conflict in the classroom. Like, you know, a couple of kids were having an argument. And always someone would put their hand up, "Miss, can we have quiet time?" So everyone have quiet time for 5 minutes. Diffused all the problems. I noticed actually the children were more caring for each other. And this is actually what they told me, just basic effects of just doing some quiet time. So the principal, he said, "Look, I don't care anyone who comes into this school and criticizes her. It's not Buddhism, it's just good learning skills." And she was praising this teacher to the hilt. She, I think, became the vice principal of the school eventually, before she retired. It worked immensely. So it's great if it was actually introduced in schools. I think there are some, I don't know if he's here today, and is one of the people who comes quite regularly, was teaching it in a school to the south of Perth, and having a great time. Kids love it, and it also does enhance their ability to learn. And their TE scores will go up. I just was reading the paper today. They have the TE, the school tables. So I think if we get a few schools doing meditation, I'm sure the results would actually go up in the league table. Simply because it's just learning how to learn. Being able to train the mind to actually to accept the information and be able to process it in a wise way. Oh yeah, but don't call it meditation, call it quiet time or relaxation or, you know, empowering the mind or whatever. Give it a spin which most people will accept. Does that make sense? Yeah, in the back. Take meditation, oh yeah, I used to be famous teaching meditation in prisons. And I mentioned it in my little book. And one of the wonderful things which happened to me, I don't mind praising myself on this because it was very encouraging, very beautiful. Once I became the abbot, I had to give the teaching in prisons to one of the other monks. Ajahn Chitamlo was teaching yesterday down at Karnak Prison Farm. And he said he had got 20 prisoners yesterday come to the meditation class, which was amazing, 20. But anyhow, when I started, taught for many, many years in the prisons. And when I became like the abbot of the monastery, got so many other duties, I had to give it to another monk. And one day I received a telephone call from one of the prison officers. He said, "Brahm, can you come back?" I said, "Why?" He said, "No, I'm so busy now." He said, "Brahm, please." He said, because he'd been in the prison service a long time. And the prison officers, they know each other. He said, "All of the people who went to your class never reoffended and came back to jail." He said, "I know that. So whatever you're doing, come back and do it again." And I treasure that, because that was actually praise from the people who really know what's going on. So it worked. You know, it made sort of the prisoners less grumpy, less negative. Why do people do those crimes? Sometimes it is because of guilt. You know, when I was just talking to someone just before I came in here, that sometimes that we have this terrible thing of self-punishment. We don't allow ourselves to be happy. And sometimes once we get into this guilt cycle, "I've done something wrong, I don't deserve to be happy." And sometimes you keep on reoffending to get punished again. You don't want to be free. You don't feel you should be free. Sometimes people get into that cycle of redoing the things which caused them pain in the past to get more pain. So I was freeing them from that by feeling good about themselves, accepting their past, acknowledging it, forgiving, learning. And when they didn't look about punishing themselves, they could be free of jail, which they were, which is wonderful to know. And one of my meditators, was great, was at the Perth airport one day, and somebody touched me on the shoulder, turned around. It was one of my meditators, Nick, in a really nice suit. He was obviously doing very well. And before I could say anything, I recognized him. He said, "Brahm, I'm still meditating." And he smiled at me. It's really nice. So yeah, we do it in prisons as well. It's a great thing to do. And there's many of the people here teaching prisons as well. I can see two or three of them who go to prisons regularly to teach meditation there. And it works. But yeah, great thing to do. So anyway, I think that's probably enough for now. Is there any other, is there another question? No.
Patipanno